Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
The following is a presentation of the Four Center podcast feed.
From the center of the galaxy, this is the Four Center podcast feed. I'm Ken Napson.
I'm Joseph Scrimshaw.
And I'm Jennifer Landa.
And you might also hear our other friends, fans and air conditioning units. I don't know. Maybe it is sweltering in SoCal. And yeah, we're used to that. But this one's got a little extra dark side energy to it. It's something that we're all recording in studios that we have to keep the sound down. So we apologize if you hear any noise in the background. That's just my perfectionist nature may be taking over, though I'm also lazy. It's a weird mix. Hi, everybody. Welcome to Star Wars Talking.
You have specific things you worry about, and I think we'll drill down sometime and understand what your fan trauma is, because you're always very apologetic about people hearing a fan.
Yes. Yeah, we need a bar conversation about all this, all that, but we're having a lot of fun today talking about Star Wars news, breaking news from a long time ago, interviews that contain stuff that we've been talking about for a few years, but it's prominently being discussed this week because the 5-year anniversary of Last Jedi is approaching. Oh my gosh, time. We also are going to take a look a little bit more at the Andor news and do an Andor news roundup. Before we do all that, today's podcast is brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook download and a 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/4center. Over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. A little bit later, we have a 4center recommends an audiobook we think you should try out on us. But let's catch up before we all melt away. Jen, Star Wars Adventures in Life, how's it treating you?
It's quiet right now. which is fine. It's, you know, as we've talked about, it's the quiet before Andor begins. So I'm taking that time to clean the house and listen to podcasts, as I do. And I listened to, I happened to find Ewan McGregor on the Smart List podcast. I don't know if you guys know, it's with Jason Bateman, Will Arnett, and Sean Hayes. And I thought, what is he going to talk about, right? And it is the most relaxed and comfortable I've heard Ewan McGregor talk in a long time. You know, because we just had this whole press tour with him on Obi-Wan Kenobi.
Right.
He was very, I mean, he was very genuine and honest in all of his interviews. But, you know, they kind of say the same things over and over and over again. Well, this was like him just basically chatting with his peers. And he did talk about Star Wars. And how when he initially auditioned for the prequels, he really wasn't sure about taking on the role because he saw himself as a very serious indie actor, Danny Boyle's actor. He felt a lot of pride in that. And he didn't know if he wanted to do Star Wars because he felt like maybe it would typecast him. But as he kept getting callbacks, he's like, I really like this role. And who wouldn't want to be, you know, Obi-Wan Kenobi? And then he just said that he really became determined to get the job. But it was just the way he talked about the whole thing was just really, really sweet and sincere. And just a look back on this legacy that he's helped shape.
Oh. It's crazy to think if he had been like, no, I'm Velvet Goldmine guy. No, that's Star Wars.
Right. Exactly. That's what he talked about. Yes, yes, yes.
Oh, that's that's really great. I got to listen to that. When he gets going and gets in his comfort zone, he is so like charming and likable. And I feel like the thing with like the Obi-Wan Kenobi press tour he just went on is like every single thing he said is sincere. But it was like, well, you all are going to ask me the same five questions. I'm sorry, but here is the real answer.
Right.
And by the literal 800th time I've said it, you know, it is what it is.
Yes. Yes. So it was nice. It was nice for him to have his guard down. You could tell he was not having to worry about, you know, saying the wrong thing and the Disney PR people getting upset. It was just very relaxed.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it was a fun one.
That is a fun little Star Wars adventure. For me, pretty simple. I learned a lesson. We always talk about how Star Wars could be applied to our life. I had some time to myself this weekend. Grace was out of the house and out of town shooting something, which was a lot of fun for her. And I held the fort, watched the Chihuahuas, and I had that like kind of like, well, all right, but what should I do to treat myself? I'm here alone, and I got the idea of pizza. And the light side, you know, I've switched to a mostly vegan diet, at least at home, and I was like, no, we're doing it all, meat, cheese, the whole thing. And I ordered so much pizza, I gave into my dark side energies. I gave into my passions. I gave into my desires, quicker, easier, more seductive. The pizza guy dropped off the food and said, you all have a good night, despite just me being there.
Did the pizza person see the Chihuahua? Was it a possibility the Chihuahua was being referenced?
He did hear them, but there was so much pizza, including wings and salad and two large pizzas, that he just assumed what a party this guy's going to host. It was just me, and I feel terrible.
Oh,
I feel
no.
terrible, mind, body, and soul. So it was. I was like, you know, I had that little voice saying, just get one. Just do one and the salad. No wings. Nope. I gave in to my desires, my power. I wanted to rule the galaxy as pizza and sun. So lesson learned. Grace came home and she said, yeah, I saw the pizza guy show up on the ring. Looked like a lot of food. I was like, yeah, it was too much. So I'm going to follow the light side going forward. So
what do you want on your pizza?
Everything. So there you go. Star Wars and pizza, lessons learned. But hey, Joseph, I know you had maybe some pizza this weekend, but a lot of fun as well.
Yeah, a lot of fun. A great weekend. I also just want to say, Ken, I understand there have been some times where Sarah's been away for a literal week, and I'm just like, I'm going to eat a frozen pizza every night. And by like the last frozen pizza, it's like I've hit rock bottom, and like I need some pamphlets and an intervention by the time I get to that last frozen pizza. And I've stopped doing that as much. So I understand. It's been a really great, eventful, hot weekend. Sarah and I've mentioned it a couple of times, are kind of in the process of switching out a bunch of stuff from our storage unit and getting some new furniture and all that. So we've been going out and about in the town and getting lots of exercise. I moved my entire record collection into my apartment, and we moved 8,000 pounds of vinyl this weekend.
On a 110 degree day. Perfect.
We picked out this weekend of like, we're going to make a big difference. And then we're both like, what have we done? but we wanted to stay committed. Anyway, point being, yesterday we were out and about, went to Burbank. Cause like, hey, why not go to the valley when it's hot out and get it, another 20 degrees of heat. Anyway, I found a copy that I didn't want to get from the internet. I wanted to find, I found a client, the client figure, the Black Series 6-inch Werner Herzog action figure.
Wow.
Best Buy didn't give me a bag, which is fine. Great. But then we immediately went to a bunch of furniture stores and I just walked around nice furniture stores just carrying Werner Herzog.
See the couch.
Oh, I love that. I love that.
I took a couple pictures of him and I don't know what it was, Bob's or West Elm or something.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that was a lot of fun. And then trying to be short about it, we did go to the John Williams at 90 show at Hollywood Bowl. I was lucky to see John Williams back in 2018. That one was kind of a retrospective. This one was a little bit more just John Williams curated night of music. So the first act was a different conductor playing some music by John Williams, but some music that John Williams is just like, this is great movie music and everyone should hear it. I didn't write it or anything, but everyone should hear it. And that was like the whole spirit of the thing. It was absolutely a celebration of John Williams. And it was kind of a celebration of his music, but just like him as a person, right? Like how much people love him and just what a great guy he is. He came out and he said, like, I'm 90 years old, but this reception has been so warm. I'm going to live another 10 years and you all have to come to my 100th birthday at the Hollywood Bowl. He's like, I'm sorry for being silly. I'm just so euphoric. Like,
oh my gosh.
He was so incredibly charming. And then a lot of the energy there was kind of like sharing the spotlight. So one of the things he played was he told this little story about how one of his earlier jobs in Hollywood was combining a bunch of music from Fiddler on the Roof from the stage show for the movie version and then writing little connecting pieces. So some of it is by him, but a lot of it is, you know, by the composer of Fiddler on the Roof. But the piece featured this just a jaw-dropping violin solo, and like it must have been by his request. The camera was not on him barely at all in this for most of the concert, but during this Fiddler on the Roof piece, it was just on this violinist, and it was kind of like amazing. All these people in, you know, Jedi robes and lightsabers there for this other thing as well, this sort of bigger piece of John Williams' history and our whole cultural journey. And this violinist finishes this just jaw-dropping performance of Fiddler on the Roof, and the place explodes, and everybody's waving lightsabers at this concert violinist for doing a banging version of Fiddler on the Roof. And it was just this sort of like weird and beautiful moment of culture coming together. Of like, I'm sure when you set out to be a concert violinist, your main goal isn't to have 1,000 people wave lightsabers at you, but it was so clearly a celebration of what she had done. You know, it was just beautiful.
Ah, that's wonderful. I've been fortunate enough to see him twice, and it's always a weird, wonderful energy. I think you've addressed it before, Joseph. You know, it's a lot of Star Wars fans waiting for him to play Freebird, right? And it's just like, yep, let's do it. And he'll make some choices. I remember one year I saw when he opened up with Hook, there was a lot of like, oh, Hook, or a lot of like, Hook. You got Yoda's thing out there. Like,
right.
It's a weird energy. So I that's actually great. I love hearing that everyone gets the vibe and knows and respects his interests and as well as his work.
Yeah. Yeah. And that I'll wrap up here with this. So they had the program on the screen so everybody could relax that he was going to, you know, close the concert with Star Wars, which was great. The main thing I wanted was the Obi-Wan theme. He did play the Obi-Wan theme. That was, you know, beautiful and soaring and amazing and great to hear it live in all those things. He played the throne room into the entire end credits. It was like watching the credits of A New Hope live. Oh, wow. Amazing. So, you know, he walks off and I had kind of guessed like, I think he's going to do Indiana Jones as the encore because he normally does Star Wars as the encore a lot of times I've seen him. So he comes back out and he's like, I can't believe I'm going to do this, but I'm going to play something from the new Indiana Jones movie like six months too early. It's Phoebe Waller-Bridge's character's Helena's theme. James Mangold, the director, just kind of demanded that I do it. So here we go. So he played that. He played the Indiana Jones theme. And he walked off and everybody's, you know, screaming on their feet, standing ovation. And I was like, all right, let's pack up. Let's go. And the 90-year-old man came out for a second encore. Like, what? I was tired for him. And he second encore that I don't think anybody was expecting, and he closed like he often does with the Imperial March. And it was like the Imperial March as a Metallica concert. Like there was just an energy, like all these people with lightsabers all around me were just like literally headbanging to the Imperial March. Yeah. And it was just a, great communal experience with fellow Star Wars fans. So a Force Center fan stopped and said hello. So that was wonderful as well. So anyway, it was just a great, great moving Star Wars experience.
Wow. Oh.
Love it. Love to hear it. And yeah, I saw some of the social media posts of him debuting Helena's Dave, and I knew you were there. And I was like, God, Joseph was going to hear that one. Because I don't know if he did it the second or third night. I wasn't following it there. But yeah, if you all get a chance, man, I'll be there for the 100th too. And all energy that happens. But it's a quite experience. And that's awesome. Awesome.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was great. So that was my adventure.
That's exciting.
Great Star Wars adventure. Absolutely is. Let's go on to our news adventure this week. 5 years out, Rian Johnson looks back at The Last Jedi as a headline. He did this with Empire Magazine. Rian Johnson gave a big interview with Empire Magazine, which is, that's just kind of, it's weird to read that and talk Star Wars and go, why would he do that with the Empire? But he was, of course, promoting Glass Onion, which debuts at a film fest soon, I think. A lot to digest in the interview. A lot of things have been on the Star Wars discourse desk for all five of these long years. So we wanted to hyper focus on some of the bigger points and things we want to talk about here. Rian talked about the movie and specifically the story of Luke Skywalker, within it being an affirmation of the myth of Star Wars. To do so, he kind of intended to, when sitting down to write, to peel back the layers of Star Wars itself and confirm its lessons and its impact. This is not far from our thoughts, to be clear. That's not just a pat on our back. It's just kind of how we like to engage with Star Wars. We dig into what is there. So it makes sense that a lot of times we hear some things that have been discussed around these parts. And it's kind of, you know, again, why we're here. But he had some good stuff about that here. But I wanted to, Jennifer and Joseph, talk about what is the value in that for us as fans. This movie in particular, peeling things back in 2017, 40 years after the franchise arrived. And what do you think about that glass onion of a layer peel?
Yeah, I was really surprised by how much he shared. Speaking of somebody, you know, who's speaking so honestly, although he was very careful in a portion of the interview about choosing his words wisely when it came to Mark Hamill, who, you know, has expressed some disagreements with the character. But what I loved is that Rian said that he approached this film as a Star Wars fan. And, you know, because as he said, Luke isn't just a myth in Star Wars. He's also a myth amongst generations of Star Wars fans. I just thought that that was really, really smart. And it's what made the movie for me really fresh, because we all had these expectations of what we thought Luke Skywalker would do, right? If he knew that the galaxy needed him. But is that truthful to where we find this character? For him to be this, you know, hero springing into action in the swashbuckling adventure, grabbing that lightsaber from Rey, is that truthful? And Rian Johnson said, no, this is what's truthful. And in doing that, in choosing the more difficult choice, in my opinion, the story in The Last Jedi becomes more of a modern myth. Excuse me, because it teaches us something about our humanity. And that's why George Lucas made Star Wars in the first place, right? You know, he wanted to tell old myths in new ways. And Rian Johnson did that. And a lot of people didn't like it. But I found it to be, that's why I love The Last Jedi, is because it is teaching us something about ourselves. And sometimes that can be hard to confront.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, those cracked, dirty mirrors reflecting ourselves sometimes. It's just really what's here. And I think you're right. It was the more difficult choice. I could have grabbed that lightsaber and run down the hill, right? And it would have been a lot of joy. And myself included, I'm not going to deny that. It would have been, there's a lot of what ifs out there that I do enjoy and do enjoy thinking about. But we love to engage with what is there, Joseph. And like I said, this is something that's been on our minds and something that I know you have spoken wonderfully and eloquently about what the movie does. And so 5 years out, is it, you know, what is the value? What's the value?
Yeah, I mean, there's the double layer of value. There's the what is the value of Rian Johnson, the writer-director, talking about it now? And like Jennifer said eloquently, what is the value of the actual storytelling that gets to live on through generations that's actually in the film? I think the value for me of Rian Johnson talking about it is, for me, it is great to hear confirmation from the creator of a thing that that I've talked about, other people have talked about, but it's become really important to me when talking about and thinking about The Last Jedi, this idea that it challenges lots of core ideas of Star Wars in order to validate them. Mm-hmm. The same way stories challenge main, they introduce you to a main character in the first act and you see the character's strengths and you see their flaws. And in the second act, they often fall to some of their flaws. And then it is their connection to their strengths that lift them back up and they're validated by the end. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that kind of familiar path is done not just to the characters, but to the ideas of Star Wars, you know, Luke's in particular, but also with Poe's when to fight and when not to fight, Finn's question of when is it worth fighting at all, or are both sides the same, all that kind of stuff. Yeah. But I think having the director clarify that's his intent and belief, I think does have some value. I don't always want writers and directors to explain everything, right? But I think it's been a fascinating journey with The Last Jedi, because they're the people who really dislike it who have glommed on to the it's a subversion and only focus on the parts of it that are challenging Star Wars and not what happens at the end of the film. But there's been an interesting phenomenon for me, just speaking personally from people I've interacted with in real life. People who love the movie have kind of talked to me with the same talking points as the people who hate the movie. That it's all about subversion. It's all about kill the past. It's all about, see, this is why the Jedi are bad, always will be. And that's why Luke wants him to die. The Last Jedi is so great. And for me, it has been watch that third act. watch that triumphant moment where all of the big lessons that Jennifer was speaking about so well are there when Luke does, you know, take up the saber. And I think for me, that's to answer the question of why does it matter? Why did the ideas need to be challenged? I think for me, Last Jedi has a bunch of moments that take ideas that were absolutely in Star Wars and then sort of crystallizes them. I think in particular with Luke, you know, going back to things that Yoda said of, you know, action, adventure, you know, a Jedi craves not adventure, excitement, a Jedi craves not these things, right? Calm, at peace, passive. What is the point of a Jedi? You go to like some of those great interviews with or videos of Lucas explaining Star Wars to the Clone Wars writing team, right? Yeah. Right. And he's talking about how the dark side is always going to try to grab for more. And so the light side is there to just hold it back. That image of Luke reconnecting to, I've lost my own understanding of what a Jedi is and why they matter. Calm, peace, stand up when you absolutely have to hold the darkness back. And The Last Jedi is just a literal image of that, of him doing what a Jedi truly, truly deeply needs to do, and in a way that works for him, in a way that's passive, and in a way that celebrates life. And defending life. So I think it takes these core ideas and really validates them in an inspiring way.
No, well said as usual, but don't ever want to undervalue what you say here, sir. It's really important and there's the part of this value going into the sequel trilogy era, you know, there's without a doubt, it is it's an IP, right? Disney acquires this company. We're going to make more of these. And, you know, JJ and Lawrence Kasdan and team come along and say, all right, we got the previous generation hanging over this story and let's address that. And literally a broken starship in the desert. And we got those kind of imageries. And I love that Ryan's kind of like, yeah, all right. So this is this big company, this big job. And we're bringing back this thing we all love. Let's ask ourselves why and maybe dive into that. And I think that's a little bit of what is going on here and a little bit of why this will stand the test of time. There is this weird phenomenon. Even some people who I know love this film, who are people I myself love and respect, do what you talked about, Joseph, where they say, hey, oh my God, yeah, Last Jedi taught us, you know, kill the past, you know, no nostalgia. I'm like, I don't know. Dig deeper than that. Dig deeper and go into it. So anyways, I also think, Jed, I don't know what your thoughts are on this too. It's something I know, Joseph, you've talked about, and I sometimes I almost come down in the middle of like, I do love hearing creators go, here's what I did. But maybe because this is like the music side of me, the radio side, where I'm like, sometimes I just don't want to hear what David Bowie meant in that song. And David Bowie doesn't want, you know, rest in peace, doesn't want you to know what he meant in that song. And there's great value in that. And I find myself when the same talking points by creators get put out there, or, you know, a company makes them sit down and say, all right, point at the screen and tell us what's on there. It's not as, you know, I have different feelings about it, but, this movie in particular, sometimes I think you do need to go, hey, here's what it's about. Just, I don't know. It's a weird, it's about Jed. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah. I mean, I like seeing how the sausage gets made, and I know that not all creators or actors or producers, directors, they don't like always like to talk about it, but I like it. I either want to be validated in what I think it's about, or I want to learn and understand, because sometimes maybe it's why I'm not getting it. And I'm like, oh, this is what you're trying to say. Okay, now that gives me a new appreciation for this material that maybe I was not into. So I find it to be really helpful, because we all are going to approach any type of art through our own specific lens and our own points of views. And so, but at the end of the day, I want to know what the artist is trying to express. I find I get frustrated when they're like, well, you can think whatever you want. I'm like, no, maybe it's like the I don't know, OCD perfectionism in me, where I'm like, I just want to know the answer. And I want give me the key, you know, me the key so I can decode things. So I love that he, like I said, that he shared so much, and that he really, and now it's been enough time. If this had happened, you know, a few years ago, I would have been like, oh, okay, here we go again. I appreciate now that it's been, and he's promoting something else. And so, and he's been able to be very successful with this new quote unquote franchise. So I like it. It makes me, happy.
Yeah.
No, I'm with you. Sorry, Joseph, go ahead.
Yeah. I was just going to say, like, I think I've had that experience in a very, in a much smaller way with like some of my plays. I had a conversation once after a Fringe Fest with somebody of like, well, you know, I know what I intended, but you know, what did you think? And the person was like, gave this really weird and really weird, upsetting interpretation. I was like, well, it's not that. So I think there's that, like, some things are, I think creators intend to be open-ended. And then I think there's times where like, ooh, people are running with this the wrong way. And then it's maybe a legitimate discussion of like, is that, you know, a valid criticism of the film if a lot of people are picking up the wrong message, right? But I think what's powerful about this, if I can just read part of his, one of his quotes, right? He says, the final images of the movie to me are not deconstructing the myth of Luke Skywalker. They're building it, and they're him embracing it. They're him absolutely defying the notion of throw away the past, embracing what actually matters about his myth and what's going to inspire the next generation. So for me, the process of stripping away is always in the interest of getting to something essential that really matters. So I think the reason that I'm not bothered with him talking about this is I feel like that message to me is clear in the film if you spend some time with it, right? But the fact that he's literally calling out the kind of key line that does distract some people and saying, yeah, hey, feel free to interpret it. It's not what Kylo said in the middle, though. The fact that he's kind of coming into it to say, to specifically address the fact that some people have focused on this part of the film, and him not necessarily saying you're wrong, but saying as a creator, that wasn't my point.
Yeah. No, I love it. And to be clear, too, going even just this discussion on hearing them, like, you know, I'm someone who, if I have a extra half hour of my day, I'm going to, you know, whip open that Star Wars Archives book and just read George explain something I've grown up with. I do love it. I'm with you, Jen, too. And there's something, I don't know, Joseph, if you agree at all, where it's like where we are in this modern era. Sometimes I just want John Kasdan to be quiet. And sometimes I just want all the clickbait headlines to go away, and they fuel each other. I don't mean to pick out on John Kasdan, because I actually enjoy him and looking forward to Willow. But like, you know what I mean? It's just like, that's where some of the energy is too, of just like, just go let the song play, man.
I think the thing that I said is, with some exceptions, you know, I'd be fine for like a culturally agreed upon, no laws or anything, but like a culturally agreed upon, like 2 years, like you get excited because like 2 years after your favorite movie came out, then directors and writers talk about it. Mm-hmm. I think the thing that bothers me is when, you know, a lot of people, and people I really enjoy and their work I really enjoy, like Kasdan, like John Kasdan, like Chris Terrio, like Rian Johnson himself, right after Last Jedi, coming out kind of like the weekend of. And it feels less like creators reflecting to the stories and interpretations that have grown up around a work, and more like almost like damage control or I just think let it breathe, and then yes, please, I want to know what writers and directors think, but let it breathe, let us live with it as a culture for a little while first is where I come down ultimately.
You have my vote in the next election, sir. I agree with it. No, it's a weird mix. It's something we've discussed both on and off air around here. And it's because I might have even in this interview, seeing this interview kind of make the rounds this past week, I was like, I just don't want to relive this trauma from 2018 discussions. But speaking about that, we got a little more discussing this large interview. I think you can get it free on the app. It's so weird now. You go click on a link and nope, you got to get a subscription. And I'm all for newspapers and magazines needing to make some money. I'm here, but it's sometimes I don't know where to read these articles anymore. I sound like an old man screaming at the cloud with an onion tied to my belt. Rian talked about the movie's reaction and living with so much of the scorn being felt by him and others on social media. He seems to have learned a lot going through that process and is in a different place with it, talking about in the early days of one negative tweet, and I would try to correct that person's view or figure out what was wrong with me and them. So what have we learned about navigating and understanding being online as Star Wars fans and pundits and podcasters since 2017, late 2017 into 2018? Jen, it's been a challenge at times, but hearing his words, what do they mean to you here, and what's your own experience?
Yeah, I mean, I think we talked about last week, The Force Awakens, and how the Force Awakens woke me up because it made me realize how vocal and quite frankly racist a section of the fan base can be. That was very surprising to me. I had never really seen it online. And what happened was when The Last Jedi came around, it was like that group had become more mobilized. And they began, it kind of corresponded with the alt-right movement, I hate to say this, that kind of came about because Trump's presidency began in 2017. I mean, all these things kind of aligned, and it just became, The Last Jedi became this thing that just ignited that part of the fan base. Now, what's interesting is, like, back then, that group of fans, they said, oh, you know, they don't like politics in Star Wars. They didn't like that their hero, Luke Skywalker, was not the alpha hero that they expected him to be. But I think that that's kind of changed over the years. And now what I saw with like Moses Ingram and the Obi-Wan Kenobi show is that these people are not just like trolls that are trying to stir up trouble. They're people that we might know. They're people that we come across in our everyday lives that just that believe diversity and inclusion is a threat and somehow anti-American. Mm-hmm. And that's like, and obviously, like, if you don't like The Last Jedi, I'm not saying that you're a part of that group, because I have friends who we've debated about why they don't like The Last Jedi, and that's totally understandable. But it is interesting to see how things have changed kind of since The Force Awakens and The Last Jedi. Mm-hmm. And you can also look at the DC stuff, and it's all been happening. And I think that it's starting to change for the better, because now companies like Lucasfilm are speaking out against it. But it was very, it was a bad, and I know a lot of people actually left social media, not just the actors, when The Last Jedi came, because it became too much. It became like this thing I love. Like I'm scared to even share my joy online because I'm going to get pounced on. And I remember I would like share one little thing about The Last Jedi, and it was like a swarm of these accounts would just like pounce on me. And it made me actually want to stop talking about it, because I'm like, I don't want to deal with that today. You know, so I cannot imagine being, you know, Kelly Marie Tran or Rian Johnson and having to deal with that. And like, what do you do? Do you like, do you combat it? Do you hide? What do you do? I don't know. Mm-hmm. Oh, it's just really, it's a tough time.
Yeah, it's a lot. It's a lot. And going back to no, and I look. I'll just, you're not wrong connecting it to these bigger issues in our country and in the world. It's absolutely connected, and that's one of the things I learned from the early 2018 days of going on, you know, Collider Jedi Council, saying I love this movie here, and having people, you know, it was different than people on the set debating me. It was different online, right? It was
right.
And some, again, yeah. And there's always this, we feel we have to qualify. Not everyone. It's like, yeah, we know it's not everyone. We just know what was happening now. I think you look back and you see it really start to crystallize around this time, and how susceptible people are to some of these organizations, or some of these folks with certain beliefs on their channel, and how just other people who are, I think, are normally great, good, sometimes even progressive people who just take this. Yeah. You know, I didn't like Luke Skywalker. You're right. Oh, this channel. I agree with this channel, and they're not connecting that channel with what they really mean. Some of the racist stuff, the sexist stuff, all that kind of stuff. And it really just kind of, it changed me. It pulled back, made me pull back. And I love what Ryan has said from the beginning of like, hey, look, there's some positive things there. And I think I've been forced to pull back far enough to make sure I try to see only the positive things. Again, not the constructive criticisms and all those kind of things. We can debate these movies at the end of times, but pulling back and going, all right, let's weed through the darkness and find what is truly there. We have a great Force Center community. We have a great Force Center listenership and connections. And I've made friends with this, and it's still there. And I see that in Ryan 5 years out of him just kind of going, yeah, I learned it. And I think also knowing where a lot of it was coming from, is why we can now make some changes, including Amazon. You're seeing there's some stuff I'm not privy to, like I'm inside, but I have a friend who's working with some a company that's helping Amazon, and they're just in their own way trying to put a foot down on some of the stuff. You hear the review bombing and all that kind of stuff, and it is being dealt with differently than it was around The Last Jedi. Not just the Disney Lucasfilm, but just the industry. They're not just going, and we talked about it with Boyega last week. It's not just that dude doesn't like The Last Jedi. It's like, oh, that dude doesn't like Last Jedi because a black man and an Asian woman kissed on screen, right? That's right. What we got about it. So a lot, we've learned a lot. And Joseph, I'll let you come in on this one here too. I just, you know, trying to find the positivity. It's hard. But if it's there, we got to go towards the light.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think that's what it's about, is going toward the light. It's really difficult, but like, this is the power that Jennifer was talking about so well, about the power of Luke in The Last Jedi, like, you know, trying to be Luke, you know, stand up for the light. That's what a Jedi is, and finding a way to not have all of social media or have all of Star Wars discussion ruined by the negativity, right? And I think those distinctions are important. I think it's great that Rian Johnson makes it. His specific quote is, as the element that I talk about when I talk about a small fraction that gets amplified is not the section of Star Wars fans that didn't like the movie. It's the section of them that are abusive online and that are actively hostile and toxic.
Right, right.
And then, you know, so I think there's, you know, the important distinction that there are people who dislike the movie and they can be negative about it. And then there are people like, they aren't even Star Wars fans. This is an opportunity to inject more racism, sexism, xenophobia into, you know, the discussion sphere and amplify how large that voice appears to be. Right.
Right.
And he had another great quote in a different article in discussion with Cinema Blend. Where he talked a little bit about how to handle it. And he said, there's a lot of great, genuine interaction that goes on, meaning on social media. The bad stuff, the systematic trolling, the almost gamified abuse that some people devote their entire online presence to. Honestly, once you've seen enough of it, you see the pattern of it. It just sort of gets boring after a while. You know, it maybe has an amount of, you know, that sounds like a great coping mechanism.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I think for me, it's just the two-pronged thing. It's the recognizing what is, like with going on with the Rings of Power, right? Where that's it has diversity, so it is being systematically attacked, right? And recognizing that is almost like, that's like an imperial incursion on a planet, and it has to be fought, you know?
Yeah.
You have to stand up and say no. And then there's just the, even if people are not... don't have a specific agenda of xenophobia, right? There's just the choice to be more negative when we talk about it, you know?
Yes.
And that's the thing that I think we also need to just like learn from Star Wars, you know? going back to Yoda talking to Luke about the force of, is the dark side more powerful, quicker, easier, more seductive? It, you know, that's just true on social media, even, you know, if you're just sharing your opinion, to try to share it in a gentler way, I think, you know, helps us all in the big picture.
Yeah. Sorry, this is, you know, not to spin this off into a 2-hour deep discussion, but no, there's something that's, I think the three of us have we've never sat and let's have a force center meeting and determine how we talk about things. I think we're just naturally aligned and go towards light, protect the light while also dealing with what's there and things we don't like. And just how I always say this, even off air to friends who I've had this discussion with, we choose how we discuss it. We choose the words, we choose the energy, we choose the tone. Part of the reason that's valuable and why I have distanced myself from some of the people in this space who I would say aren't the phobia and ism laden people, at least on the surface, at least they don't think they are, but it's the way they choose to discuss it and gives into that. Not all fans are that way, but I can still hate The Last Jedi. Yeah, you can. And you can hate it. You can hate it if you want, if that's how you want to lead with that kind of energy. But how you discuss it, it's like cleaning up our own house. Mm-hmm. Right. It's some of the stuff I've battled in my own life with either, you know, certain political leanings in my past or my family or my old job and some of the folks in there, where it's just like, I understand you're the good one. You've got to help us fight the bad ones then, and not just point and go, those are the bad ones. That ain't me. And yeah. I think that filters into how now, 5 years later, why it's important, the way you discuss it, the way you present your criticisms. It's not just simply about not, you know, concentrating on joy or not wanting to take joy away from fans who like it. That's part of it. But just like, yeah, you leave room. Don't leave room for people to glom on to the wrong things. And you are accidentally, maybe at times or unintentionally supporting the darker things out there. If that makes any sense, Jen, I don't know. But,
yes.
You know?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Because, you know, when I shared my thoughts about Reva and Moses Ingram's character, and it was interesting to see the difference in approaches. Some people were like, yeah, you know, her character didn't really resonate with me. I really wanted her to do this, this, and this, or I was hoping for that. We had thoughtful discussions. I had some people that were just like, she's terrible. She's a terrible actress. I'm like, oh, that gives me nothing. Okay, well, why? Why do you think she's terrible? What makes you, what do you qualify as a good actor, right? I just think that, like, it, when you just give up, I hate this. I hate that. It's like what my kids do, you know? I hate the beach. What? Why do you hate the beach? Because there's sand. Okay, you know, like you drill down into what the real thing is that you're trying to say. And if you don't, and it takes courage, right? To like really put your thoughts out there and to say, I don't like this because X, Y, and Z. It's a lot easier for somebody to say, I just don't like it. Deal with it. You suck. Like, it's just like, yeah. It stays at this surface level discussion that I'm just like, okay, I'm not going to even engage with you, because if you're not willing to put in the time to your argument, why am I going to come back with my argument, with my evidence and present my case? Right. And I just kind of feel like we're now at this point in social media where things have changed. Way back when we first started, yeah, we all kind of shared opinions. Like, I had a delicious lunch today. Okay, you know, here's a picture of my yummy salad. Like, yeah. we're past that. We're now, our words really matter. They will come back to haunt us. Yeah. They are, you know, people use it in jobs. They'll say, hey, I saw what you tweeted about this. Or so it's just all really important that if you're going to share an opinion online, share it. Don't hide behind them.
Yeah, just being like, I think that there is this thing of just like, yeah, even if you have no isms, right? You're not being racist or sexist or xenophobic. Are you just a bringer of negativity, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, imagining somebody like, you're a great engineer, but I see you spend all of your days just randomly replying to people who eat peanut butter and jelly sandwiches that they're crap. Like,
right.
Why do you need to do that? Like, and right. That's some of the stuff that I'm aware of too, of just like, sometimes I don't post something joyful about Rise of Skywalker on Facebook because I don't want drive-by negativity. Mm-hmm. And that's not about me disrespecting somebody's opinion. It's about them bringing negativity to my joy for no reason. Like, it's great that you don't like it. Post on your own page.
Yeah.
Why are you coming to my page to, you know, put some negativity into my joy?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right. No.
By the way, my first Instagram photo was of lasagna, I believe. And one of my final thoughts on this, and I wish I had the tweet up, but our pal Andres Cabrera from the First Cut film folks over there, and he works with me on Castle Talk and has been on Force Center many times, and hopefully will be again. He just, during the Moses Ingram Reva stuff, during Star Wars Celebration, he just put out a tweet of, I'm paraphrasing, but I don't care what you think about her acting or the writing. Look around. Now's not the time.
Oh, yeah. Mm. I remember that. That was so good.
And that's kind of what the energy I'm talking about, too. And I think, Joseph, is a drive-by negativity and everything, where it is not someone angry in a car going, here it is. I'm going to use all the keywords to get the YouTube algorithm going. I'm going to repeat the same phrases over and over. I'm going to put them all caps in the description, and I'm going to gamify the system and make a lot of money. It's not those people. It's just the person with the normal podcast or a person at the bar who's like, yeah, you know, you're right. The Moses Ingram did suck. And it's like, all right, even if you feel that, and even if that's true, look around. This black woman's being attacked simply for being a black woman in this cast. Now ain't the time, bud. Take a seat. And I think that's part of what's going on here too. And that's something that I really truly myself learned late 2017 into 2018, where I dared to say, I like this movie. So anyways, any final thoughts on that one? We have one more thing for this interview. This was a big interview.
My just final thought is to try to bring it back to positivity. It is great to hear from people who listen to this podcast and many other podcasts that choose to stay positive in terms of the way we discuss things, even if we don't like something, being kind and decent about it. It's clear that, you know, there is power to the light side, because that's what people always say to us is, thanks for your Star Wars talk and for the kind of a friendly attitude about it. So I think that it is important to keep fighting the good fight.
Mm-hmm.
There you go. Absolutely. And for the final record, not every Force Center listener loves every opinion we have.
No.
In the Discord server, there is some like, oh, I took a different, or it happens a lot. I don't want anyone to think this is just a big old bubble heading in the same direction. There's thought, there's discourse, there's discussion. It's how you, our listeners, all choose to discuss it with us makes it all good. Final thing here. Ryan stated that he was remain close with Kathleen Kennedy. All right. So that's what he says. And they talk often about him being back in the Star Wars world. He still contends, like her and others have in the past, that schedule remains the biggest hurdle. Ryan said, it would break my heart if I were finished. All these years later, Joseph, Jennifer, what do we think when we hear the phrase Ryan Johnson trilogy? Jen?
Yeah. I think the idea of a Star Wars trilogy in general kind of feels far-fetched at this point, unless we know it's going to be a guaranteed success. Mm. Or, like, there's kind of already a fan base for it. So not that there's not a fan base for Star Wars, but you know what I mean? Like for example, the Old Republic or the High Republic even. I just think the movie industry has changed dramatically, is why they've shifted to Disney Plus and streaming services and things like that. It's just different. So I believe Ryan when he says that, you know, he's going to work for Star Wars and that he's friendly with Kathleen Kennedy. And I think that they believe in him and they enjoyed working with him. Mm-hmm. But I go back to, I think Kathleen Kennedy once said this about something. She was like, it's always about finding the right time. And I think maybe 5 years from now or 10 years from now, maybe we'll get a Ryan Johnson Star Wars movie, but not anytime soon.
Yeah, I agree with that. I agree with that. I think it's more realistic to think of, he's going to direct a Mando season 4's premiere or something like that, you know?
Right.
I think that's more realistic. And I'd love, when I hear that phrase, there's a little bit of like, I don't worry about it anymore, right? Because I would love to see it. I was a big fan of that idea when it was announced and still. So would I love to see it? Absolutely. I just think for many reasons that I don't think I'm expecting anytime soon. So I'll take that 5 to 10 year bet, Jen. That's okay. A good spot. Your thoughts when you're in a coffee shop and you hear Ryan Johnson trilogy.
I think perhaps the word trilogy might distract us, because I agree with Jennifer. Mm-hmm. I think it is a very wrought time to just announce like ahead of time. Yep, we're doing 3 movies no matter what.
Right.
That's a real budget question. That's a real, you know, question of everything that is being changing in Hollywood with the box office almost month to month.
Seriously.
And with the streaming services almost month to month. I think Ryan Johnson will do some major Star Wars project again. I think for him to say, I've stayed close to Kathleen and we get together often and talk about it. In Hollywood, that is a massive sign of commitment if you physically get together with an executive at this point.
Yes.
Maybe he means over Zoom. But if he's physically had three lunches with Kathleen Kennedy in the last 5 years, he's set. That's my opinion about it. I also just think that, yeah, this absolutely aligns with everything that they've been saying of, you know, Kathleen Kennedy is obviously, and the whole team is still exactly figuring out what do the movies look like. And I think that the streaming service side of it is, do people want big movies? Do they want entire franchises of big event films that live only on streaming? Right now, Rian Johnson is a pioneer of that. His deal for the Knives Out trilogy or to do two more films that are mostly going to exist on Netflix, but Netflix can change its mind any moment. Yes. He is also kind of at the vanguard of, do we want to do these kinds of movies on streaming? So I'm sure that's part of what they're talking about, not just creative of, well, do you want to do, you know, one movie in a theater, or do you want to do it, this epic trilogy that's only on streaming? Is that make sense?
That is so, I didn't even think about that. Of course he could do a movie only on streaming. Oh my, that's probably how we're going to get it. That's how we're going to get a movie from him. That's why they're having all those lunches.
Yeah, we gotta do some scooping. If they have lunch in person, we always go to Smokehouse mentally and literally here around Portland. But Disney's more on the Glendale side of things, so I gotta find some Glendale, like Damon's Hawaiian Steakhouse brand. We're gonna find them. We're gonna find them having a lunch in a corner. We're gonna do this.
Let's stake it out. That'll be great.
Or maybe it's just Cheesecake Factory or Red Robin at the Gallery. Actually, that's closed now, sadly. All right. There you go. There you go. Ked knows all the chain restaurants' fates in this town. He does. All right. We're going to take a quick break, talk about an avalanche of Andor news. A lot to get to. But before we do that, we're going to do a Four Center Recommends. Joseph, what do we have today?
We are still recommending the great Star Wars book, The Princess in the Scoundrel by Beth Revis. We did a big breakdown of it. Ken and I got some kind words from the author, Beth Revis, who listened to the podcast. And I feel like when we do a 2-hour podcast and the author just says, I listened to all of it, I feel great pride. Truly, truly love this book. So I encourage people to check it out.
It's absolutely amazing. Yeah, we appreciate those kind words from Beth Revis. And say, I listened to all of it and I got like teary-eyed or misty-eyed. I'm like, did we say something wrong? Oh, no, I think she meant it in a positive way. So check it out yourself and then yourselves. And if you want to, go back and listen to our deep dive on it, The Princess and the Scoundrel. Download your free audiobook today by going to audibletrial.com/4center. Again, that's audibletrial.com/4center for your free audiobook. All right, quick break on the other side. Andor news here on 4center.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Life is full of awesome what ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. Like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra.
Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Welcome back to Forcetter, the big show, the superstar destroyer of our fleet, the Bright Tree Village of our hearts. Which, by the way, Jed, you just at least read the first 100 pages of that book.
Oh, yes.
It just quality Ewok time. It's got Landa written all over it.
It's
right?
Amazing.
God, the Leia drawing that they shared. Oh my gosh, of her and her wedding. I freaked out.
Yeah.
I had to pull over because I was like, what? What is this?
Wait, are you getting Star Wars news while you're driving?
Oh, I was stuck. And, you know, terrible traffic. And I glanced down and I was okay, hold on.
I've done that too. Yeah.
It would be a long video, but honestly, I think instead of doing like a trailer reaction, you should do a first 100 pages reaction and film yourself while you're actively reading The Princess and the Scoundrel, because you're going to be doing so much screaming.
And then the flower flyers came in and Ewoks made a ring. Oh my gosh.
I'm going to freak out.
Okay. Chirpa got drunk at the reception.
What?
That's in my head, Cannon. We're going to take a look at some more Star Wars news. Like I said, it's an Andor news roundup, as you know, would be expected. The series, as originally planned, would have already been out by now, but it comes out September 21st. And I still feel some of the marketing that was in place for the 31st release was still in place. They just like, well, we got to train left the station here. So here's where we go. We've got four things. We're going to run quickly through what's there, and then we're going to kind of go into like one thought or two about each. We had the what I'm calling the everything TV spot, little 30-second spot that I think the highlight is Stellan Skarsgård as Luthen Rael yelling at Saw Gerrera, everything, which was amazing. We had a timeline video where Diego Luna just simply came and said, all right, cool. Hey, here's where the story takes place. We had a new poster, and then we had Genevieve O'Reilly in an interview talking more about Mon Mothma, what we're going to get. I think there's some fascinating things, some of what we've already heard, married life, personal life, politics, how it all kind of intersects. But she talked about how she still, from the time she was cast in Revenge of the Sith up through Rogue One and now Andor, she still goes back and reviews, kind of watches Caroline Blenkinson's Mon Mothma performance in Return of the Jedi, which I found interesting. So we'll start with the everything TV spot. What's one thing we liked about the TV spot, Joseph?
So I liked the sound effect in the music. It made me feel like Boba Fett was singing this.
Yes.
I loved the music, but it had a little bit of that same quality as the Boba Fett theme of starting with wah. So that was one thing I was very curious about. A small thing I liked is that seeing the TIE fighters, right? I knew they were going to be there, but the scream and the bolts, it got me excited for, yep, there's a lot new about Andor, but it's going to be exciting to see old things in a new context. So I was really excited by the TIE fighters. And the big thing was just the Luthen intensity, right? I knew it was a Luthen, a focused one, but a couple real specific things. A lot of times the dialogue, you can't really tell what scene it's attached to or who's talking to who. This one line, he's clearly actually saying it to Mon Mothma, right? And he's saying, the time has come to force our hand. Or I'm sorry, the time has come to force our hand.
Get angry.
And then combining that with the scene where Saw's like, well, you know, what did it cost? And this is everything. Both of those are combining to make it seem like, okay, in this era, Luthen's the zealous one. Luthen's the one who's saying anything. Luthen's one pushing Mothma and Guerrera. That it makes him a very interesting character. And I know that this show is going to be deep enough that we're going to get the why of that. So I'm just really excited for Luthen.
It's so great. Love that. Love that. Yeah, the music. Time Grappler. Got to see some Time Grappler again.
Yeah.
I'm always excited for that. Jed, no, one or two things or whatever you want to say about this wonderful little trailer.
I was shocked because I got a push notification from YouTube and I thought, could it be? Yes, it is. Another clip, another TV spot or whatever. At this point, I just want to watch the show. Like I'm getting full off the appetizers. Just give me the meal now. So I really like that. Usually we see Saw Gerrera is the one yelling with a sense of urgency. And this time, like you said, Joseph, it's Luthen. Everything. Very intense. Saw Gerrera actually looks very calm in comparison. So I'm excited to see this character and to learn more about him and his different costume changes and outfits. Because he has many. And I like that. It seems like he goes undercover. But that's what isn't it? Wait, did you title it Everything, Ken?
I don't know if it was that. That's what stood out to me. So,
me too. Yeah.
Okay.
That was my favorite part. Everything.
Yeah. The thing I've been loving so far, even we talked about that minute or so clip they released with Andor and Luthen. And I was talking about this with a friend a couple of days ago where, you know, I'm clearly hyped up for the series. I'm like, you, Jen, and Joseph, like, just serve the food. All right. I've looked at the menu. Give me the food.
I've been ready to rock for 25 minutes.
Are you ready? What are you going to do with your life? Watch Andor. Just release it, please. Yes, and there's TIE fighters and there's action and there's blasters and Bix's run. And there's action in this series. We know we're going to get it. The things I've been pulled in by so far are those conversations, are the tense. Where'd you steal that from? I'll pay you credits for it. Or this one of just like, what's it? Everything. It's got to cost everything. And it's no lightsabers are out, no TIE fighters screaming in these scenes that I love and all that other stuff. I don't know about the lightsabers, but all the other stuff's going to come without a doubt. It's a Star Wars story. But I'm ready for these really intense, low, almost whispered, we've got to do this conversations. I think I'm excited about that. So,
yeah.
And then we got the timeline video. This was just wonderful. This was like a corporate synergy video of some good infographics. A lot of stuff going on here. This is like Joseph, you and I loved watching the guy from Denny's talk about Denny's Diner in Solo. Right? Just had that energy a little bit better. Anything you anything you guys reacted to this little what I call direct? Hey, this is when the show is marketing.
Yeah, I mean, I think for me, my main reaction was, let's travel back in time and do this for every project, right?
Yeah,
I think it's just a great. I think it was written and delivered, of course, by Diego Luna with enough sort of pomp and circumstance and energy that it didn't come off as just a Denny's marketing plan, even though it's got that energy. But it the value of it is the clarity, you know.
Yes.
Would this have helped Solo a little bit? I'm not saying a one timeline video would have changed the box office fate of Solo, but it might have helped a little bit. Rogue One did fine at the box office, but probably more people would have enjoyed it, you know, if, you know, they didn't think, hey, is that Rey? I just think I love Star Wars kind of exploding out in every direction timeline wise. And I think as much as we can help as many people just get simple clarity. But the clarity of when it is on the timeline does also tell you, well, why should I care? You know, that line of thrust into, you know, one person finds himself thrust into a journey that sparks the birth of rebellion and sets in motion everything you've come to know. Right. Mm-hmm. That's hyping. That's telling a casual fan. Why should you care? Like, oh, did that Andor guy help build the rebellion? Also, I'm very curious if that's a bit of hyperbole or if the Andor show is going to try to be like, no, this is the birth of the rebellion.
Hmm.
Yeah.
So good selling point for casuals. a great way for us intense fans to debate. Mm-hmm. What about all these other events that sparked the birth of the rebellion?
Yeah, I love what you're saying here too about, hey, you know, it's just an example of maybe they've learned over the years and how to, you know, help prep the casual fan, which we can't overlook. We try not to overlook, but mm-hmm. these things become, I say this a lot in the Game of Thrones world, the casual general fans are the ones that made it a phenomenon, not the mm-hmm. book readers, not the ones who know every inch of the map. It's the ones who are like, cool, dragons are fighting, let me watch. That's how the numbers get big, and we want Star Wars to succeed. So it's going to be the, where is this? What are we doing now? Oh, it just makes a lot of sense. Maybe something they've learned over the years, I would think. So, Jen, did you learn a lot? Were you like, oh, I didn't know?
I loved it. It reminded me of like when you're going on a ride in Disneyland and they would have that video playing so we could see Diego Luna before we're about to go on this Andor ride.
Patrick Warburton on the California Soarin' thing.
Right. Yeah. But I honestly, I do think it's actually really helpful. Yeah. The graphic, it, for me as a visual learner, I was like, oh, this is great. Of course, I know when it takes place, but I'll tell you what, I have a little timeline chart, a Star Wars timeline chart by my computer that I refer to often.
Wow.
Because I just, I get, it can be overwhelming, right?
It is, yeah.
Can you share that?
I have a lot of stuff going on and I'm like, wait, when is the same place? Okay. All right. So Diego Luna, and I even love, there was one point where the graphic like goes, the line goes right into him just to make it extra clear that this is now his part of the story. Yeah. I loved it. Loved it.
It was a great TikTok video. They were home. I want to know more about Landa's timeline map because I think I might buy one. How much are you selling them for? I think sometimes I need them. I even had some of the like recent books and Brotherhood and everything where I just kind of like I don't even want to know that. Like what week is it? Like we're down because even Beth Revis said about Princess and the Scoundrel. She's like, I knew I had about 21 days to tell this story. Oh, in the Star Wars canon timeline. And it's like, mm-hmm. okay, Alex Damon, if you're listening, get us the canon by day video that's 19 hours long because I think that's pretty valuable. That is great. We also had this new poster. I got to tell you, I love this poster. And what makes it for me, because, you know, there's the modern movie and TV poster sometimes gets maligned, I think sometimes for good reasons, where there's a, you know, like this one here, you got the main star, then all the other characters flow out. Right. It's a very similar design. We've been seeing this kind of design for the last few years. And sometimes I think it is generic and they don't stand out. This one stands out to me. I know what you guys think. It is the TIE fighters screaming in the background, the Star Destroyer, and that smoke is the big difference for me. I don't know why, Joseph. Mm. You've got a little some skills here designing things. What is it about the smoke that makes a old Kenny go, yay?
Yeah, no, I gotta pull it back up so I can do my best work when it comes to composition discussion. So in the meantime, while I'm pulling it up, I think that one of the things that's great about it is I do like some posters that are a little bit more just simpler and iconic, and I think like the Kenobi posters did that. And then we do have the posters that are a little bit more busy because they have all of the heads. The thing that is powerful to me about this one is in fact there's a slightly different version of it that's a billboard that went up on the walk between our home and the Hollywood Bowl. And Sarah and I passed it and I went, Ander, and she's like what, are you okay? And it's like, oh, it's a whole thing with Luthen. It's like, Ander. But then I asked Sarah, I was like, hey, can I point some things out to this billboard? And she's like, sure, that's great. And it's like, here are two things. One, the second biggest head is Mon Mothma, which is great because that we're going to spend quality time getting to know this human being, this character. But then all of the heads are like, and all those other heads, we don't know most of them yet. And we're going to get to know these new characters. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the power of having this many faces on this poster. And then compositionally, I think it is the power of Diego Luna's eyeline. The way the smoke is billowing upwards, it's like there's an explosion right about his hip behind him. The energy of the smoke going up throws your eye into that corner, and then Andor looking powerfully back the other way pulls your eye back into the poster.
Mm. Yeah.
See, that's why I go to this Kinko's, sir. All right? You know, by the way, Joseph studied it. He didn't just work at Kinko's. I am teasing him. No, you're absolutely right. The eyes, his eyes are the center of the poster in a lot of ways, even though they're in the corner. It's everything about it. No, and you're right. Yeah, the poster of floating heads, is like as you can call it, is sometimes is like I said, generic. This one, you're right. I mean, looking at it now, it's like, sure, Mothma, and we're getting to know Luthen already with his gravelly voice we love and saw. Everything else, I might be able to tell you the names. I don't know them yet. And it is kind of a collect them all type of vibe. You're going to know all these characters soon. That's exciting. Jen, your thoughts?
Yeah. That's exactly what I thought. I thought, I don't really know these characters, but by the end of this series, they will be old friends. I love, for me, it's about Cassian looks consistent to the Cassian that we met in Rogue One. I like that, even though this is going to be a new story, a new journey, new origins. I also love the diversity. There are so many women on this poster. It's incredible. So many different types of people. Old, young. Sorry, Stellan Skarsgård, to refer to you as old. You're not old. Older.
I get a senior discount.
Andor. Younger. It's just, it's great. It makes my heart sing. I'm so excited for this show. Just give me the show. Let the rebellion begin already, please.
It is always here. Joseph, do you have anything? I think I cut you off. Anything else to add about the smoke billowing up?
No, you didn't cut me off, but I will take the opportunity to say I love how much the internet loves Hoodie Luthen, and I'm glad Hoodie Luthen is on the poster. And I look forward to buying that action figure variation, which is specifically Luthen with hoodie.
Well, the amount of variations we've seen in his looks, I think not since Padme will we have the need for a figure collection that has all the looks of Luthen. final thing in here we talked about is Genevieve O'Reilly. Just so excited to see more of Mon Mothma and her in this role. And it's just it's a fun little note of you get a little part in 2005 or for a movie released in 2005. You're cut out of it. Showing up in YouTube videos, spend your career going, I was in that, but I wasn't technically in it. And then next thing you know, you are in it. You're in Rogue One. You're in Star Wars Rebels. And now you get to be a serious regular here. It's just kind of a fun kind of thing to see. But how do we feel about this thing that she still watches the original Mothma in Return of the Jedi and pulls a lot from it there? Jen, Return of the Jedi, it means a lot to us. What do you think about this?
Yes, I love what Genevieve O'Reilly has done with the Mon Mothma character. She's really given her life and just, here's the thing about Carolyn's performance. For me, ever since I was a kid, it felt very stiff, very regal, very it was specific, right? Yeah. But I didn't really know much. She just kind of seemed like an enigma, the character of Mothma, and she still has kind of remained somewhat of an enigma, which is why I'm excited about her storyline in Andor. But I really think that Genevieve O'Reilly picked up on this thing that I never really realized, that the character seems worried, fearful. You know, she's got a lot on her plate. And the fact that she took that and kind of ran with it and made it very real is what I'm going to say. Her performance, her acting is very real and rooted in truth. And I really like that.
Yeah. No, there's something like, you know, as a kid, you're not analyzing this. You're just on the playground and, you know, it's just this, I always say I kind of grew up thinking Leia was the leader of the rebels and that was it. Right. It was just kind of how it was kind of positioned in a lot of ways. And again, she was the only, you know, action figure you had from, you know, you didn't even have a Jando Donna action figure, Kenner, come on. So I just kind of, it was weird for me in Return of the Jedi to be like, well, who are they? Who are these people? But I was drawn to them, definitely drawn to Ackbar. I had a Maydeen because that beard and hair, but Mothma was angelic in a way, but I did always pick up on the sadness. And there was this kind of sadness, somber, serious nature of it. Of as a kid of just like, I think I did pick up, I connected with the idea that these are the good guys going to go win I'd already learned that's what happens in movies, but man, she wasn't cheering, you know, there was just some weight to it. And I think that always worked. And so to pull that and build a character and kind of explain how she either gets to that point or why she has that thought, why she also tries to have a normal life, this mention of her home life and what we're going to see with that. Conversation that happened there. It all is just making me more excited to build back to that, to know that she still brings that up and to kind of go, all right, here, let me connect back to this performance, Joseph. I don't know. It's always, it means a lot to me as a original trilogy kid.
Yeah, it means a lot to me, too. I mean, I love that we're going to finally get to know more about Mothma. I love what she says in that interview about, you know, we see her talking to senators, then we meet her at home with her husband. We see the public and private. We see her literally and figuratively take off her cloak and reveal herself as a woman in a way we've never seen before. Thrilling. Mm-hmm. Great. Mm-hmm. But I love that all of that starts with the performance in Return of the Jedi, because I think, you know, we talk about the tip of the iceberg storytelling of Star Wars, that I think one of the powers of the original trilogy in specific is, yeah, it mentions the Clone Wars and you go, what is that? But it's also just in the performances where you just see a little note and you know that there's so much more to that. And mm-hmm. I feel like, yes, Mon Mothma comes across as regal and I'm just getting things done. But also there is this sort of like great authority to her, but mm-hmm. it's quiet and it's heavy yeah. and it's serious. And the Mothma line, right, is the many Bothans died to bring us this information. And right. that to me is like the tip of the iceberg line of like in the middle of this briefing to talk about plans. There's this somber, like we don't have time for a full funeral, but I'm going to deliver the weight of a funeral in one line. To remind us all, this rebellion is a horrible thing that has to be done, but it's being done at great cost. And let's not let the Bothan sacrifice be in vain with this information. And there's like all of those ideas in that one line delivery that could have just been flat and thrown out with everything else. But the way she stops and is clearly haunted by it and is clearly making this leadership choice to let everyone in that room see that she is haunted by the fact that the Bothans died for this, that is just kind of emotional tip of the iceberg storytelling. And here we are decades later, and this other great performer, Genevieve O'Reilly, is going to show us the rest of the iceberg.
Yeah. Oh, man, you make me excited to kind of quote Pee Wee Herman. I'll say I'm going to go watch Return of the Jedi right now. Like, I think I'm just going to put that on today because, you take me back to a place there and everything you're saying is right. And just, yeah, and it's one of those, like, famous Star Wars lines and how after Rogue One, and we could get one about the Bothans. Yeah, great joke. So proud of yourself. But there, it does mean a lot. And it does mean a lot in that moment. And as the Star Wars story continues to roll out, you're going to be able to look back on that. Maybe we will get more of the story one day. Are they a species? Are they a gang or a group? Whatever it was, there seems like to be up in the air in the canon. But yeah, a lot there. We always say this about Obi-Wan Kenobi and Sir Alec Guinness, right? He created enough space in his performance that you could just put an entire lifetime of stories in the middle of those lines. And I think she does that too. So mm-hmm. thank you, Caroline Blankenston. All right. That is our look at Andor news, Star Wars news, Andor news. It's all the same. Before we get out of here though, we're going to take a look at Star Wars history this week in Star Wars history, looking ahead to Star Wars past. And I thought of Jen specifically for this one, but September 7th, 1985, school just back in session, maybe a week or two, wherever you were, the schools in your neighborhood. Star Wars fans were treated to something extraordinary. The debut of the Ewoks and Droids Adventure Hour. Two shows, 1 hour of greatness. The shows are part of ABC's Saturday morning cartoon block. Over the decades, both shows have been loved, mocked, forgotten, and perhaps secretly enjoyed by all. And definitely, I think recently, rediscover they got a new life with the re-release of the shows on Disney Plus. Friends, let's go back to 1985. What did those shows mean or not mean back then, and how did that reflect our fandoms then? And we can talk about what we think about them now. Joseph?
Yeah, this is a real consternation to love journey. I mean, back in 85, just to kind of put a picture to it, to the way I experienced it, is that, you know, genre on screen, superheroes, spaceships existed in like a couple movies every other year, or the only other place you could get it is Saturday morning cartoons. Mm-hmm. So the thrill that we were going to get some more genres on Saturday morning, you know, in between Mr. T cartoons, yeah. you know, was so thrilling. And I was so hungry for more Star Wars. It was a dream come true, but a bittersweet one. Because, of course, as a kid, I wanted lightsabers and spaceships and blaster battles. And this was focusing on the cuter and the funnier side. Mm-hmm. And, you know, even as a kid, you know, I liked the Ewoks. I got the action figures, but I was a little like, why are teddy bears in my action adventure thing? So when I was a kid, it was bittersweet torture because I wanted more Star Wars, but it wasn't exactly the Star Wars that I wanted. Mm. Now, now as an adult, I appreciate the absolute importance of the funnier and cuter side of Star Wars. And watching the cartoons back, there's a bunch of weird, scary stuff in there.
Yes.
Much more weird, scary, interesting, thematically deep stuff going on in these fun kids cartoons than I picked up on as a kid. So old me is shaking his finger at young me. Mm. And they're also more fascinating now because they're a cultural document of that time, you know, that bonkers droids theme. from 85, but also like things like, yay, that's an early version of Dex's Diner in an episode of Droids.
Right,
you know,
right.
They're fascinating just as, you know, cultural documents. There's a character named Kaibo Ben or Kaibo Ren, right? Mm. They're fascinating on multiple levels. So challenged back in the day, love them now.
Love this. Jen, I want to end with you here, so I'll slide in a little bit here for a second. You're saying a lot of things I identify with and connect with, Joseph, just like it's the time. We are 2 years removed from Son of the Jedi. I did want more Star Wars. This was not it. And also for me, this is coming up on 10, right? So I'm in that 9-10 range. You do start to change a little bit. Star Wars has always been in my life, always will be, but there was that little weird period of time. And it's weird to think here. This is September 7th, 1985. Well, a few months prior, back in March, Robotech was released, and as I've said before in the show, that means a lot to me, means the world to me, and it was, at least at the time, felt a lot more adult than Ewoks and droids. People died. Used to saying people are going to die. They did in Robotech, and it seemed more heavier, seemed bigger, and it felt like a natural progression for me, and not that I had these deep thoughts at 10. Well, this is a natural progression for me. It just... the two worlds plus, you know, other interests are starting to come to my life. And then it's like, cool, I do love Star Wars. I love the Jedi. What is going on here? Ewoks are dancing or whatever. I don't know. And I didn't connect with them. And I still haven't connected with them. They're on Disney Plus. I poked through them. I'm going to sit down. You all out there listening, if you drink or don't drink or you do any kind of substances or whatever, it seems like that kind of show that you might just want to sit down, pour whiskey, or take something else, take some sort of gummy and go, whoa. So maybe one day I'll do that with a bottle of rum and take it all in, because I think you're right, Joseph. There's a lot there. You look back and go, not unlike some of the original drafts of Lucas's stuff where we always talk about Mace Windu or Naboo as a planet early on. There's so much stuff in there that people, I think, have built into other wonderful things in Star Wars canon. Anyways, that's where I was in my life. So I have a weird relationship with it where I just, even now, look at them and go, man, that was a weird time for me as a Star Wars fan. But Jen, was it weird for you? Did you enjoy it? Where are you now with it?
Well, I remember watching the Ewoks cartoon, but here's the problem. And I was really excited about it, but I will say it did kind of creep me out and it was a little dark. I remember that. And so that was on ABC, but the block on NBC, you had Smurfs, Muppet Babies, Gummy Bears, which premiered in September of that year as well. That had a hold on me. And it's like, do I want to watch the Smurfs, Muppet Babies, and Gummy Bears? Or do I want to watch the Ewoks, which can be a little scary, and this weird droids show? I chose the Smurfs. And the Muppet Babies and Gummy Bears. Oh my gosh. Like that, because it was just like light and happy and it didn't give me creepy nightmares. It's like, I really wanted to love the Ewoks. I really did. But yeah, it was very 80s. And now I've watched it with my kids and they really enjoy it. But there are some episodes that, number one, feel kind of dated, you know. And number two, do get really scary, especially for my now 3-year-old. She's like, Mama, I don't like that. I don't like that weird character. So we don't watch it as much. But my 7-year-old, she still loves it. And that actually was a huge win and a way for her to get into Star Wars when she was too young to watch the movies. Although there are some episodes that are definitely very dark.
This is such a perfect legacy for the Ewoks. We're like, oh, that Ewoks cartoon, is it too cute or too terrifying? The perfect Venn diagram of Ewoks.
Yeah.
So true.
Monster hypnotizing and then eating the animals. It can get a little spooky.
Yeah. I also want to point out, too, as much as I'm saying at 10, I thought I needed to be adult and not watch these shows. I also was a huge Muppet Babies fan, so I went that direction, too. So it's all there. But you know why? Because Muppet Babies and their Star Wars and Indiana Jones parodies. I was waiting for those every week. So
that's right.
It's all connected. Well, there you go. You all can decide for yourselves if you haven't watched the shows. They're on Disney Plus. But that is what happened on September 7th, 1985. What a day in Star Wars history. We're almost out of here. We're going to let you know where you can find us. Thank you all for listening. We're the Force Center podcast feed. We're on Twitter at Force Center Pod, Instagram, and YouTube as well. If you want to do us a favor, give us a sub over there on YouTube. We do monthly live Q&As. More additional programming is going to come when all three of us, you know, have hours available. We're finally going to put more regular things up there. Just bear with us over there. Facebook page is Force Center Podcast. We're on Vero too, by the way, which I'm now using regularly. We're on Vero. I think there's a post. I think it's an old logo, but we're there. Podcasts available on Acast, iHeartRadio, Apple Podcasts, and more. Just search and find us. Merch available at tpublic.com/ForceCenter/user/ForceCenter and patreon.com/ForceCenters, where you can support us directly. And from there, get into our Discord server. We keep it connected to the Patreon page just so we can make sure all of our Force Center friends can come to a nice, wonderful, warm place to discuss Star Wars, all sides of it, have some nice discourse. If you want to get there, you can get there through our Patreon page, any level. You can follow me at Ken Napsok. Go to KenNapsok.com for more information on other things I'm doing. I am reviewing House of the Dragon and Rings of Power on Casterly Talk. Folks like Alden Diaz, Andres Cabrera, Rachel Cushing Levine, and more, including Lauren Roma from the Galactic Podcast, have been on there as well. So check us out over there at Casterly Talk. Jennifer, where can they find you?
I got to listen to it. Just watch the latest episode. You can find me on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, and YouTube at Jennifer Landa, my TikTok at Jennifer Landa 1138, The Quiet Before the Andor Storm, The Quiet Before My, and that's not so quiet, before my daughter goes back to school. Once she goes back to school, I'll be having more content everywhere. So I look forward to that in a couple weeks.
That's awesome. Well, you know what we're going to do? I'll do this on air, Jen. I'm going to nail you down here a little bit when both your kids are in school, and that might mean college. Maybe we have to wait to college. I'm gonna get you on a databank dive and dive into something there soon. So Joseph, I know you got a lot of things going on too. Where can they find you and get more information on your stuff?
Yeah, I gotta first clear my schedule for when Jennifer's kid goes back to school, so I can have more time to watch all the great Jennifer Landa content, because the TikToks are so good. They really are. They're always funny and insightful, and they're so good. In the work that you put into them absolutely shows. So anyway,
yes,
you can find me watching videos, or you can find maybe some of my own videos on Twitter, Instagram, TikTok is at Joseph Scrimshaw. All my other comedy stuff is on my website, josephscrimshaw.com. I got to put up there on the website. I will be in Portland for the HB Lovecraft Film Festival. I have a short film playing there, and I believe I will be part of a Q&A about some of the short films. More info on that coming soon. And as always, I want to give a shout out to Vote Forward, the organization where you can write letters to other voters to help them, convince them to use their power and vote. If you're interested in doing that, the website is votefwd.org.
Absolutely. No, thanks for reminding us to do that more, too. Yeah, check that out. There you go. Have fun in Portland, as the Replacements once sang. Bow, bow, bow. We'll see you all next time here on Force Center.